Thank you for allowing me to be a part of the program today and for Behring Ingelheim to be one of the major sponsor and one of the sponsors. You may wonder who in the world is Behring Ingelheim. A lot of people ask that question. We are a researcher and manufacturer of veterinary vaccines and pharmaceuticals. And our U.S. headquarters is located in St. Joe, Missouri, not too far, of course, from the offices of American Angus. So we do come across cross paths once in a while with the people there at the American Angus Association. And I just realized today that if I miss my plane tomorrow, I can go over to Walmart and get a raft and put it in the Missouri River right down here and take a nice raft ride home. It goes right by St. Joe, so I don't know how long it'd take, but it might be fun. Maybe this is July, it might be better though. Today I've titled my topic, Take Care to Process and Protect Them Properly. Now, process and protect, that's not necessarily the same thing. And I'm finding that in the animal health industry, we have a lot of things we need to do as far as changing our methods and procedures. And a lot of things we do in the cattle industry, we do because of tradition, because granddad did it this way. And that isn't always the best as far as serving our needs. And so, process and protect. Process, basically, we're talking about vaccinations. And protecting, that's, again, two different things. And so, we want to process so we can minimize the carcass damage that may be occurring and has occurred in the past with a lot of our products by injecting them in the muscle. And we want to, in the same time, process so that we are able to accomplish what our goals are, and that is protecting the animals that we're vaccinating. So to understand protection, we understand a little bit about basic immunity. Immunity is, of course, the ability of the animal to protect itself because of the antibodies and other parts of the immune system that has developed resistance to various diseases. And there's all kinds of parts of that immune system. We're not going to get into talking about that part today. Basically, you have the antibodies and you have the cell, what we call cell immunity. And both parts of that immune system are very important. But protection really is a relative term. And just because we vaccinate an animal does not automatically put a magnetic field around it so that it's impossible to get disease. What we're trying to accomplish with vaccination is to stimulate that animal's immune system to develop its own resistance. Therefore, it's relative to the degree of challenge that's going on in that herd. Now, how do we immunize? There's obviously various ways. You can immunize with the natural infection. If it's a pretty serious disease, they may not live through it. And that's not the most practical way to immunize. But nevertheless, if they do get a disease and live through it, they usually have some nice immunity for that disease from now on. Just like when I had chickenpox as a young kid, I have chickenpox immunity today. Now, not all diseases hold long-time immunity that way. But that's one way, of course, of being immunized. But in order to avoid the sickness and the death and so forth, we have for many years vaccinated animals to create that immunity by using vaccines which fools the body into thinking that it's having the disease, and therefore the animal develops immunity against the disease due to the vaccine. Or you can have what we call passive immunity. That is, of course, temporary immunity that the young animals receive from the mother from antibodies from the colostrum milk. That, again, is a temporary thing. But we want to accomplish is long-term immunity. Our objectives for vaccination, usually, of course, we're thinking about protecting that animal. But really, we should be thinking more about protecting the herd, because that's really what we're going to accomplish, because no matter how many animals you vaccinate, you'll never have all of them have 100% immunity. So if we can get the herd immunized so that we have 90-some percent protected, at least we're protecting the herd from disasters. There still may be occasional animals that will not have a level of immunity and they will may come down with a disease problem once in a while. But we want to avoid the disasters, and really that takes herd immunity that we think about. The other reason we may be vaccinated, of course, is to help us with reducing our reproductive losses. Some vaccines are able to accomplish that, and sometimes we aren't able to, and a timing has a lot to do with that, as we'll point out here a little bit later. We also may vaccinate to improve performance, such as in feedlots, where they want to reduce the diseases to keep the low-grade disease from causing reduction of weight gains and feed efficiency. Or in some cases, we're vaccinating to help ourselves in merchandising our calves. Many sales now require certain vaccination programs in order to have preconditioned sales of a preconditioned type cattle or other terminology that they may use. But nevertheless, that's part of the reason we're vaccinating, to help ourselves and make a little more money as far as our calves selling for a little bit more. Now, we think about key definitions of vaccination and immunization. They're not the same thing. Vaccination basically is just the process of giving the vaccine. Immunization is what we're trying to accomplish. We hope they're the same thing, but it isn't always the case. And there's reasons for it that we'll look at here in a little bit. Now, when you think about, as we said earlier, protection really is a relative term, because in every herd there is some level of disease, that whatever disease might be, that might be circulating through the herd. Let's take, for example, a BVD problem. Maybe there is a BVD carrier in the herd that's shedding some virus. So you may have some level of virus circulating in the herd. That would be called our challenge level within the herd. But we may not see any symptoms in the rest of the cattle or any of the cattle, because we're keeping our resistance level or our immunity in the herd in general. We're keeping it at a higher level. So that's what we want to accomplish. We want to keep those two apart. But there's problems at times when maybe we go home or buy some calves at a sale and bring them back and put them in with our other cattle without good isolation time and so forth. But what may happen, we may introduce a new virus into the herd that we haven't vaccinated for. Therefore, our challenge level now for certain diseases may increase above what our normal level of immunity is. And so we may have a period of time we go through some breaks. And that's, of course, what we want to avoid. The other thing may happen is that we may forget to vaccinate or put it off a while. Instead of vaccinating every 6 months or every year, we may just don't get around to it because of other things that we're too busy doing. And therefore, because our vaccine program has been stretched out, our immune level may begin to drop below the challenge level. Therefore, we start to see signs. So these are some things that we have to think about. As far as herd immunity, what we're really trying to accomplish is keeping that level up high of our resistance and keeping it apart from the challenge. We also have to think about the proper timing is what we have to use of the vaccinations in order to accomplish this, as we'll say here in a minute. But, for example, when you have breeding problems, or the breeding season, I should say, there's going to be a greater challenge, say, to the fetus right after the bulls are put in and they breed the cows. And therefore, we may be thinking about being sure our resistance in the cows are higher at that time. Or if we know we're going to be bringing in some outside stock that we don't know their history of the vaccination history or what kind of diseases they may have been exposed to, then we may go in and boost our vaccinations prior to them coming in, so we have a nice high level of immunity in the herd before the others are introduced there. Now, the thing about why calves or cows or none of them really may always develop 100% immunity, or why our vaccination programs don't always protect 100% of the time, there's various reasons. If the age of vaccination, for example, when we vaccinate calves, a lot of times the maternal antibody that they are carrying will interfere with a vaccine. That is true with some diseases more than others. The clostridials, for example, the blackleg type products, we know most of the time the antibodies are pretty well gone by a couple of months of age, even if you're vaccinating cows. But as with BVD, sometimes the antibodies in the calf may last 6 or 7 months, and therefore may interfere with vaccinations of a calf at weaning time even. But in the same herd, there may be calves that the antibodies are gone at 2 months. And so that variation is there, but in some calves they're able to respond and some are not. That's why if you're keeping them in your herd for breeding stock or replacements and so forth, you should continue to vaccinate and even beyond that weaning time. And of course, there's various other things associated with why calves and cattle respond to vaccination and why they may not build a good immunity. And that, of course, some things involved around the stress level at the time, as well as nutrition, which is a big factor. Various minerals are involved, trace minerals and protein, all of the major nutritional aspects play a role in how well an animal can build immunity, because obviously you think about antibodies, what are they? They're protein. So animals have to have protein to build antibodies. So nutrition is a big factor. Parasitism, of course, is another factor, dragging the system down so they may not be able to respond to vaccination. And then we have to think about what kind of vaccines we're using. We want to take a little bit of time here and go through these and give you a little basic difference, the basic differences in the types of products and so forth. But you have modified live vaccines, you have kill vaccines, and we have to think about proper boost screen and so forth. Now, when you think about, again, what can happen with particularly calves at weaning time or calves that are brought in into a feedlot or whatever the case may be, we may know, or they may not know really, but there is a level of challenge there. We don't usually know what it is, but hypothetically they say it's here. But because of the immunity level may start out up here, but we wean them, we transport them, we process them, we take a diet change, we have weather problems, all things you can add even more than that to the list. But we obviously realize that at times we put a lot of stress on the animal, and because of that, their ability to protect themselves, ability to develop immunity, really has dropped below their level of challenge. Therefore, we see some sickness at times when we bring calves in. We get them through that period and they straighten out and things go on okay. So, but that's kind of the normal process. We have to think about why that is occurring. So we think about the various types of vaccines. First, we have on the list modified live. Modified live usually refers to viruses. That's what we usually make. There is a pastorella that's a modified live or a live, but for years we've used modified live viruses. A lot of people are afraid of them because of the old technology 30, 40, 50 years ago. But the technology that we use nowadays to make modified live makes them very safe. But they are very efficient in producing good high levels of immunity, and that's what is important. We also have kill viral as well as kill bacteria. We'll mention that in a moment. And we have to think about the proper boosting. All right, first let's look at kill. Kill vaccines basically make from killed viruses or killed bacteria, such as the pastorella or Haemophilus, or we make a toxoid. A toxoid would be harvesting the toxin that's produced by the bacteria that actually kills the animal. For example, clostridial, the black leg, and enterotoxemia, overeating as they used to call it. The enterotoxemia is caused by a toxin that's liberated by this bacteria. So we harvest that toxin, we neutralize it, and it's called a toxoid. Or we also use the bacteria itself, the clostridial organism, and kill it, and make it called the Bactrin. So when you see the label, your vaccine, it says Bactrin toxoid, like it does on a 7-way clostridial product. It's made up of killed bacteria as well as the killed toxins. Those things then stimulate the immune system to respond to build immunity against those diseases. So you can have killed bacteria, killed toxins, or the killed viruses. Now, what are the advantages of the products of killed? In general, the killed viruses became popular because they were safe in pregnant cows. And that was why they really became popular, even though they did not have the ability to protect as well as modified live. They were used in pregnant cows. And they're labeled for use in calves nursing pregnant cows, which made them very handy also for preconditioning programs. Handling considerations, they're easy. There's no mixing. They're ready to go usually. There's always exceptions to every rule I'm giving you, but generally they're already mixed up, ready to use. And they're quite stable, even though the labels always read, use upon opening. When you tear the seal off, the little metal cap off the top, you have taken the seal that the manufacturer guarantees them to be sterile to that point. Once you introduce the needle, then no longer can you guarantee a sterility. But USDA, if it's a licensed product, USDA requires sterility tests. In fact, there's about 25 different sterility tests goes on in that batch of vaccine before it's ever released out to the market. So that vial is sterile when you receive it. But when you put the needle in it, particularly if you've been injecting calves and you keep filling your syringe with it and you keep putting it back in the bottle, I can guarantee you're going to grow bacteria in about a week. But what do we do with it? Sometimes you put it back in the refrigerator because I'm going to booster them in 2 weeks with the same bottle. That's where you get into some other problems, such as some abscesses. But nevertheless, it is sterile and stable and easy to work with. That's why we like the kill products at times. The disadvantage of kill products requires an adjuvant system, a chemical to stimulate the immune system. Because the bacteria or the virus is dead, the immune system doesn't recognize it very well. And so we add an adjuvant, a chemical that stimulates the immune system. And so that chemical is a little bit of an irritant, and that can cause some problems that we'll see here in a moment. Usually we have less ability to stimulate the T cells, the cell part of the immunity, than we do the antibody side. It's a slower immune response. With kill products, again, because of that aspect of being killed and an adjuvant, it takes a couple of weeks before the animal is actually building much immunity to it. A lot of time we have a blackleg break and we vaccinate and say, well, it should work tomorrow. It doesn't work that way. It takes about 2 weeks before your vaccines are really beginning to work on kill products. And then it usually is after the booster, which we'll mention here in a moment. And it does usually take on kill products multiple doses. However, there's a lot more products in the market today, and we have several ourselves, but several companies have what we call one-dose products, usually with an oil adjuvant, and they can give that vaccine and not booster it in 28 days, but obviously it does require boostering on a semi-annual or annual basis, but that first initial booster isn't required in a lot of the kill products now. But that, use it according to label, that's all we can really tell you. With the kill products, we also have a little greater shock risk because we're putting more volume and do the chemical of the adjuvant, more animals are potentially going to have an allergic reaction, even though that's still fairly uncommon, but that's always a little greater risk with the kill than it is with modified life. Now, when you think about the killed product and the type of immune response, basically, a lot of people are misinformed about this or don't understand it, I guess. Again, we think about what the protective level that we need, that we think we're going to need to prevent the disease. The first vaccination, if you just gave one dose and it calls for two, you're going to get a little blip of it, immunity, and then it's gone. But if you give that booster like you're supposed to, we get what is called the amnestic response, and that you get a nice real kick with that when you give it within that 14 to 28-day window. And that's why that window is usually suggested for the booster, because that's when you get that nice bump. Whereas if you don't, and you wait 6 months to booster, like a lot of times we do, what happens? We got a little blip here, and we get another little blip here, and we can just keep going through life with the little blips of immunity, and we're living on luck. And wonder what happened when we had come up with a lepto break, because I've been vaccinating every 6 months, Doc. Well, you haven't never given this first big booster, which really sets them up for the future. Then when you booster out here, you're always above the line, at least theoretically. So that's where we get into the problem. I know it's awfully unhandy, and we say, well, I got range cattle, I just can't bring them in to booster them, but I tell you that it's certainly a problem with trying to create the immunity you're really thinking you're going to get with when you're not given a booster. Okay, I'm going to slide here a little quicker because of time, but most products do require boostering, but now a lot of them have the one-dose claim. Now, modified life. The advantage of that is quicker immunity. Usually within 5 to 6 days, we can have a decent level of protection. In fact, with the IBR, we've shown even a 48-hour protection with modified live vaccine. So they can work a lot quicker. They stimulate a different part of the immune system, and that's why they're becoming a little more popular as far as the diseases such as BVD to really get ahead of it. And in general, there's less volume, less chance of reactions, and so forth. The one first dose kind of starts the reaction or the vaccination, the immune response, and then because it multiplies a little while in the system, it continues to stimulate the immune system. And the way they're made nowadays and the system they use, it's essentially impossible. I guess you never want to say 100%, but essentially impossible to get contamination of the vaccines that we had back in the 70s when I was in practice. It was once in a while you'd have a vaccine that had a contaminant because they didn't know that virus was growing at the same time the other virus was. But the systems they have now, they can eliminate that. And there's other disadvantages, so there's a little bit of immune suppression with such things as BVD that may interfere at times. Label precautions, most of the modified lives will not allow us to use it on pregnant cows or calves nursing pregnant cows. There are some labels that now have adjusted that. So always follow label directions and use the vaccine as they're supposed to, avoid the heat, stress. They're a lot more durable than you think they are, but they're not made to just sit out in the sunshine and ultraviolet light for very long if you're working cattle and mixing them up and leaving the bottle on the fence or the in gate or wherever you're leaving it. Get it in the cool while you're working the cattle. Avoid disinfectants if you're using modified live. We don't want those on the skin because of potentially or rinsing your syringes with it. Administer as the label calls for, sub-Q if at all possible. And a lot of our vaccines now are labeled for sub-Q, and we're getting it out of the muscle as the BQA calls for. So our successful immunization calls for us vaccinating good healthy cattle in the first place. That's where vaccine is supposed to start, not after they're already sick, and using the proper administration and, of course, vaccines that are USDA licensed, shown to be safe. Now, when should we vaccinate? Well, not whenever we can catch the cows, or when we first finish the harvest, or when the kids come home from college, or whenever the neighbors are available. That's quite often the scenario, but that's really not the best scenario. We need to really time the vaccine properly in order to think about when is the best time. Here is where we're going to have a little paradigm shift, I think, with a lot of cattlemen, because we've been doing things for so long. And yet, for example, BVD, we've been hearing a lot about it lately, and the persistent infection of BVD calves. They occur because of the cows being infected with BVD during the first part of gestation, first third of gestation. And therefore, the cows are okay, they've been vaccinated, but the virus still gets to the fetus and infects the fetus. Well, one of the things we've been thinking of doing for many years, we look at the calving, or the breeding cycle here. Here the calving, we put the bulls in here and get over here. Preg check may be up here even at weaning time, but somewhere in here is preg check, and that's when oftentimes we're vaccinating cows. That's at the very wrong time for trying to prevent problems that are occurring here, because now this cow has immunity, has got a nice high level here, but by the time it gets all the way back around here before you put the bulls in, it's at its lowest. And so we've been vaccinating for BVD for years, but we've not been stopping this problem. Unless we vaccinate prior to breeding, you're never going to stop the problem, because you've got to have an extra high-level immunity right before you put them with the bulls, so that in the first third of gestation, you have the highest level immunity. That is also true with the other breeding diseases, as far as that goes, even though we've been getting by for years, the leftover vibrio and other things. If you really want your highest immunity, you vaccinate them before you have their greatest exposure. Where do we vaccinate? Now, this has, of course, been an issue that's come up in the last 10, 12 years. Early 90s, when the NCDA, at that time the NCA, began to get complaints from various restaurants and butchers and supermarkets and so forth of abscesses and lesions in the meat, they began to take the initiative to work on this. And so, and they've done a good job. In the industry in general, we've done a good job. But we have to vaccinate basically subcutaneously as much as possible. If the labels allow it, do it. And most of the labels now are getting to where they are approved for subcutaneous use. So we want to vaccinate in the lower cuts of the meat, which of course in the neck area versus in the rear end area. Now, I know a lot of the vaccinate calves still, branding time, and you pull them up and shoot them in the rear leg. This is a study that NCBA sponsored several years ago, but they put a clostridial in the back leg of a calf at branding time. They followed the calf till slaughter, which is over a year later. That lesion still there that they put in at branding time. So this is not what we want in certified Angus beef, right? And so this is why we have to make changes in the way we've done things for many years, even though it's the handiest thing to do to slip it in that back leg. Not quite as handy maybe to slip it in the neck skin. And so we make it. Everyone needs to make an effort to change this process. However, that same irritating vaccine that causes that type of a lesion also results in a subcutaneous knots. Now, I would have got an Angus picture here. But you know what? I've taken pictures of Angus and knots, and they don't show up. Advantage, huh? But nevertheless, there's been a lot of resistance for the first several years over, particularly from purebred breeders, because we don't want to see these lesions. And I understand that. You know, I used to show cattle too back in the 4-H days and all that. We didn't want any blemishes. And for a while, the judges made it tough on you and so forth. But there's been a lot of change, not only the judges, but the order buyers at first took advantage of this. And the better feedlots told order buyers, ignore this because they know they've been vaccinated properly and not going to have a lesion that's going to be trimmed out later. So if we don't ignore this, we're going to find that it forces us back to the muscle. But we do have to accept a little of this, unfortunately, because some of these vaccines, even though it's up to us as companies to work on this, and believe me, we are, but still these vaccines are an irritant. That's the it takes an irritant to develop a good immunity. And so they do have a little bit of this problem. And so subcutaneous knots should not be a pricing issue. At first they were 10 years ago, but they're getting to say a little better at this. But they should not be a problem because if we understand what they are, they're not an abscess. They're what we call an immune nodule. They're almost like an allergic reaction to the vaccine in the local sense. And basically we've done studies to show that the calves with the knots on them have just as good immunity, if not better, than the ones without the knots. And so that is not a problem if you really think of it that way. Now again, this is Solaris. Phillips had been a high-bred bull, but he had this about a half a grapefruit size knot, and not an abscess, just hard as a rock. Some vaccine, particularly oil adjuvant ones, will stimulate a little of this. Well, he sold it at a discount, and the guy that bought it got a good deal. So 10 months later, the same bull, that's where the knot was. It's gone. And they do usually disappear in 4 or 5 months. The big ones take maybe 6. But realizing that they do disappear is something you have to take in consideration and not get too quick on getting rid of them. Here's a calf in the slaughterhouse. It has a knot on it. And the feedlot guys don't usually worry about it because they know that's there. And it'll pull off with a hide. And it's not a blemish to the hide. It disappears in the tanning process too. And so it's been an educational process for a lot of people. Even the order buyer or the packer buyers had to go through a process of learning that, well, yeah, this is good because this means it's on the outside and not on the inside. But it's still a learning process, and a lot of people are still resisting it. But we have to get around that because our, of course, major goal is to realize that all of us are in this together in supplying the food industry. And I know you're making a lot of money on selling breeding stock, but the ultimate goal is, and our ultimate product really is the product for the food industry, and we have to protect that to make sure the consumer is very happy with the product they buy and that they don't buy a nice roast off the round that has a lesion in it like we saw earlier there on that Clostridial. That concludes what I have to say, and certainly there's about a minute time for questions or so, according to my clock. Yes, sir.